Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CashFly.com. This is Floss Weekly with Chris DiBona, episode 15 for November 10th, 2006. Taurus Balog of OpenNMS. It's time for Floss Weekly. Welcome back to another thrilling, gripping edition of free Libre and open source software.
And dental advice.
And dental advice, too. Well, it's really the name is the dental advice. Chris DiBona is the open source program manager for Google, but he doesn't come speaking for Google.
Yeah, but you know, it's one of those things where I work for Google, so if I say something, I'll get in trouble anyway. So,
you know, Mark,
actually, I don't get in trouble. They're really, you know, I get along really well with the company. So.
And you're doing what really they hired you to do, which is promoting open source software. I mean,
well, actually, exactly, yeah. So they're pretty happy with what I do.
Part of the job, and boy, I tell you, just the more I use it, and the more I use closed source software, the more I like open source software. It's just, it's great to hear about it. Why is that?
Open source doesn't hate you, Leo.
It's true.
It's not trying to use you. It's not trying to rip you off.
That's really true. It's for us, by us.
Yep.
Which if it hadn't been...
It's like FUBU.
Yeah, FUBU hadn't been used, I would have called this FUBU Weekly. But then that sounds like something dirty, so I maybe should stay away from that. So today we're... normally, we in the past, we've had kind of marquee names in the open source movement. But there... And you pointed this out. There are a lot of projects out there that are just day-to-day useful, great stuff that maybe doesn't get as much press.
Yeah, regular listeners to Floss Weekly will remember me talking about things like the BCG survey that shows like 85% of the projects are like one or two people.
Right.
But it's like, you know, I want us to sort of meet everybody. You know what I mean? I have the good luck in my life and my job to be able to hang out with these people, right? And so I get to talk not just to the people who are fantastic and fabulous and everyone knows them, but also the people who are just, you know, working hard and are making the internet better for all of us, right? And today's guest is one of those. His name's Taurus Balog. I don't know him as well. I do know his project really well. It's called OpenNMS.
Maybe you better explain what OpenNMS does so that...
Sure.
Because this is something a lot of people use, but not everybody will know about.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. It's one of those things that's used for them more than people use.
Right.
It is a network management platform. Which I know sounds very exciting. But basically, when you have a lot of machines, when you have a data center, when you have a large corporate network, one of the things you really worry about is knowing when something's breaking.
Right. And this is typically done.
And if it's performing, what's that?
This is typically done with very big, very expensive enterprise software.
Yeah, so there's something called HP OpenView. There's other things.
Tivoli. And these are tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, by the time you're done outfitting them, they look more like hundreds of thousands. And you'll have a dedicated person running them. And, I mean, they are vastly expensive. But also, you know, frankly, they're not always that great.
That's the irony of this, is that you're paying a lot of money for something that isn't that good.
Well, it's actually a really hard problem to solve. I mean, how do you know every single device out there, right? How do you know how to talk to them all? How do you monitor them? How do you monitor them without bringing them down? This is another problem. Tools like these often, if they're misconfigured, will destroy your network. They'll break them.
Right.
So it's important you do them right. And so things like OpenView and Tivoli and the rest, they don't break your network. And the same thing's true of OpenNMS. OpenNMS is, of course, all open source, and you know, just has you know, a vast amount of capabilities, you know. So
as usual, Taurus was scratching his own itch
when
he founded it. Yeah.
Yeah, basically, you know, if you look at the OpenNMS page, the first thing it says, I've recently been working to replace HP OpenView Node Manager.
Please.
With OpenNMS.
I'm dying to replace it. Well, let's say hello, because he's quite a character and has perhaps the best name in open source. Let's say hello.
Yes.
Taurus Balog.
We started by asking Taurus how he got into OpenNMS. a little history. I came from the world of network management software. I was not a programmer, pretty much an integrator. So I used the tools and used the HP OpenViews of the world, used the Tivolis, the Micromuses, all this expensive stuff. And in 2001, I had the opportunity to go to work for a group of people who were doing OpenNMS. At the time, it was a company called Oculan. I don't know if you ever heard of them. They were created out of the ashes of Atipa. Atipa was trying to do
Atipa? Really?
Yeah. They were trying to do a VA Linux play, you know, where they were the network compact of Linux before everyone realized that the software's not the problem. It's getting those hard drives from Malaysia. And so it was a lot easier for Dell or Compact to be the Dell or Compact of Linux than it would be for Atipa. And so they had gotten in this project. Some people I'd known had started this open source project called OpenNMS, and they had acquired that group of people. And so they had this kind of network management tool and these one use, and they said, well, why don't we make a network management appliance? And their goal was, you know, you go and buy a Linksys router at Best Buy, you sit it down on your table, you plug it in, you go to a web interface, you click a few things, and suddenly you're on the internet. You know, very easy to use, aimed at small to medium businesses. Well, they still had a lot of people asking about this OpenNMS stuff, so they brought me on board to see if I could make a business out of it. You know, doing some kind of support, custom development training, that sort of thing. I started work on September 10th, 2001. It's a very easy date to remember because we didn't get much work done the next day.
No kidding.
And
good timing on your part. Yeah.
Exactly. It was one of those things. I'm driving to work, and hey, honey, I heard a plane hit a building. Hmm. But so I was there for about 8 months, and the Oculan guys got some new investors who just didn't understand this whole open source thing, and they didn't want anything to do with it. So they basically, we just released OpenNMS 1.0, and they said, hey, you know, we're not going to do this anymore. You know, stop work on OpenNMS. And there was something, you know, when I started, I used Windows, I liked Office. I was so frustrated when I put Linux on my laptop, I couldn't get a decent word processor. I mean, at the time, you had Abbey Word and Star Office, you know, which we won't talk about. Now, NeoOffice I use every day, but that's 5 years down the road.
You're a Mac user.
Yeah, I'm a Mac user, and I still use Linux on the servers, but for the desktop, it's Mac. And so I went to the CEO, and I said, look, I think there's some potential. Let's give it to me. Let me have OpenNMS. And so they gave me the domain names. He basically looked at his watch, and he's like, if you're off my payroll by Friday, we'll give you some boxes, you know, give you OpenNMS.org and .com and send you on your way. That was the easy part, going home to the wife and saying, hey, honey, guess what? I'm going to sell free software. That was a little harder. And I live on a farm, so I literally bet the farm on this thing.
Did she say, you oxymoron?
Oh, yeah, that was pretty
funny. How do you sell free software?
I told her, hey, I want to get a commission on free software.
So we make it up in volume.
Yeah, really.
We've been married over 13 years now, so we survived that. We'll probably survive anything else. But the whole goal of OpenNMS, though, was, you know, to compete with these enterprise tools. I'd worked with these, like Micromuse Netco. I'll name names. Micromuse Netco, I was working with a company called Cable and Wireless. Had spent tons of money, obscene amounts of money with this, and had problems getting it working. And when Cable and Wireless had their little issues, they were using like about 20% of what they bought, and they went and said, hey, can we knock our support costs down? And they said, no. I'm like, you spend that amount of money with me, you know, where's the customer service? Where's the power? And while I was there, I was trying to, I found a security bug in their tool. They had basically an RPC daemon that was running, and you could connect to it and say, hey, give me an X-term as root. And I opened up a bug and said, hey, here's a problem. Got no response out of them, and finally I, you know, broke into one of their websites. Jeez. And said, you know, and left a message as root, you know, if I was a bad person, this would have been really bad for you, and sent another message back. And that kind of frustrated me, because as a tool user, I want better tools. And so I saw this potential in OpenNMS, because it was designed from the start to monitor tens of thousands of devices. You know, it's real easy to monitor a single device. You know, I can just write a script that pings it every minute or so. You know, 10 devices is a little harder. 100 gets more complex. You know, once you get to 1,000, 10,000, you run into problems. And so we had started out to do this to be enterprise grade. And managed to keep the company going and get customers. And now we have half a dozen full-time employees. But the big thing we have is we've got a great community. We've got probably about 10 guys, 10 to 15 guys who are not employed in any way with OpenNMS who dedicate a good portion of their free time to the project. So very, very happy about that. What else did you want to know?
What is a maintainer?
The way I view it is, you know, when I not only did I go home to my wife and tell her that that I was starting this company and we were going to sell free software, I also was not a Java programmer, and the tools written in Java. And now I'd programmed before. My first computer I got in 1978 when I was 12. You know, it was a TRS-80 from Radio Shack, so I knew BASIC, took C in college, that kind of thing. But so I did what any geek does. You go out and buy a book. And so I had like a big black book of Java. And the first thing I did was hire people smarter than me. As soon as, because I can fix a bug that's like a recipe bug. You know, you do A, B, and C, and the code says do A, C, and B. Well, I can fix that. The problem I ran into is when everything was fine. You were telling it to do exactly what it's supposed to do, and it didn't work. So one of the guys I hired was this guy named Matt Brzozowski. He came from IBM. You know, big Carnegie Mellon computer science graduate, brilliant guy. We call him the Nog, because that's you know.
The Nog?
Nog. He does have kind of a big head.
Wait, the knob or the Nog?
Nog.
The Nog, as like, in noggin.
Noggin.
So, not the knob, because that would be kind of mean.
The Nog, that would be a little rude, unless you were playing cribbage. But, so, you know.
Ooh, I like the cribbage, gratuitous cribbage reference. You could call him his nibs.
Isn't it? What is it? One for his knob, two for his heels.
Heels.
Let's keep going.
Yes.
I don't know, because I've always wanted to do a cribbage podcast. I think this is an opportunity here.
We can edit all this stuff out later, right?
No, we edit nothing.
Oh, my. but anyway, you know, and the first thing Matt did was he found a bug in the JVM. I mean, he actually submitted it to Sun, but this is a problem you run into with any kind of commercial or closed software. We submitted this bug to Sun that they had a problem, and we, of course, didn't wait 4 or 5 months for them to address it. We worked around it. One of my favorite stories is my first customer. This we've had this customer for 5 years. It's a hospital up in Minnesota, and they bought support from us when it was .8. So they are real trusting. They've been through a lot of our little hurdles, and they were using Extreme Networks gear. And when Extreme Networks would, this is, I think they fixed this problem, but what they used to do when they sent a trap, an SNMP event, they'd leave a zero off. Now, computers get a little upset when you leave a zero off.
What, they leave the zero off?
It's, well, I mean, so what do? You get out Ethereal and you get a trace and capture the data, and then you go to the RFC and you say, oh, when you send an SNMP version trap, this object ID is supposed to have a zero after it. And you submit a ticket to Extreme, and about an hour later, we get an answer back, and it says, works with OpenView. Now, we would have helped. Yeah, I mean, I'm not making this story up. And so we're sitting here puzzling what to do, and the customer, with the customer who had very little Java programming skills, did a grep for the log message, found the log message, went to the line ahead of the log message where it was testing that variable, and put a little if statement in. I mean, all programming languages have an if statement. And said, if this shows up missing the zero, add the zero, throw the, this is the stupid Extreme log, and go on with your life. And he fixed the problem.
I like it.
You know, in the span of like, from cradle to grave, that whole thing was about 4 hours long.
It's called a MacGyver.
Is that what?
That's what I'd call it.
Yeah, I mean, but you can't do that if you don't have access to the code.
Right, right.
And but it's, you know, I've been listening to a bunch of your other podcasts, you know, trying to catch up here, and you know, everyone keeps talking about open source, and to me, there's certain problems that just lend themselves to an open source solution, and it's anything that requires a lot of customization or a lot of custom configuration, such as network management. I'm not so sure that World of Warcraft, if they open sourced their game, I'm not sure what they would gain from it, because the expectations are different.
More ganking.
No, but yeah. it seems like OpenNMS is kind of the perfect open source project. I mean, I can't see the success of it. It's relatively simple. The people who are using it are relatively sophisticated, and they want to get in there.
Yeah, well, the problem,
and also a lot of people are really dissatisfied with OpenView.
Even better.
So this is a little far in, but it's like using OpenView from, well, the last time I used it, which was some time ago, admittedly, it's like pulling teeth. It's like poking yourself in the eye with somebody else's stick.
So for somebody who's never been a sysadmin, can you, I mean, just the, you know, the thumbnail of what this is and what you need it for.
Well, there's actually, when you say network management, there's actually an official definition called FCAPS. It's an acronym by the ISO standards guys, and it stands for Fault, Configuration, Accounting, Performance, and Security. So those are the five areas. When you're talking about, I want to manage my network, and in this case, I mean, the network is anything on the other side of the keyboard, because that's what, you know, I don't want to talk about systems management versus application management. You know, when I say network management, I mean everything, systems management, application management, the whole works. And basically, when you get to a network of any size, it becomes a lot harder to manage what's going on. You without it, you get the phone call from the VP who says, you know, I can't get to my email.
Right.
And you go, oh, really? And you do a ping, and you do all this stuff. The idea is to automate that. And probably the most successful open source tool out there right now is Nagios, started by this guy named Ethan Galstead out in Minnesota. We talk with Ethan. He's a great guy. Nagios drives us personally to be a better product. But our goals are different because we want to monitor tens of thousands of devices. And you run into some issues with Nagios as far as scaling. And one of the big things is automation. We have one network which has over 50,000 nodes on it. You know, if you had to go and edit a configuration file for every one of those nodes, you know, you wouldn't be able to do it. So what OpenNMS does, I could say we have, there's four halves of OpenNMS. Started off with two halves, three halves, now we're up to four halves. The first half is discovery and configuration. I mean, so you turn on OpenNMS, and what it'll do is it'll go and it'll do a ping sweep of your network. You can configure how you want your network discovered. And it'll go and say, oh, here's a device. Let me see if it supports SNMP. Oh, it supports SNMP. Well, what type of device is it? Oh, it's a Windows box. Well, I'm going to go, you know, I have my little chart of what I want from Windows box, and so I'm going to go and say, okay, collect on CPU utilization, disk space utilization, those things. Oh, you're a Cisco router. Well, I want to collect on different things. I want to collect on maybe temperature, bandwidth, those kind of things. And it automatically adds it to the system. Now, the second half of OpenNMS is service monitoring. This OpenNMS was started, the idea was started back in 1999, and in network management, the buzzword was SLAs, service level agreements, SLAs. And I don't know if you remember, you know, some of the new guys may not remember that, but man, you know, that was, you know, gotta have five nines, you know, gotta have my nines. And so OpenNMS was started to go and act like a user. Because you take OpenView, OpenView could do a ping, and it could collect some SNMP data. And that's pretty much how it started out. And so when SLAs came up, OpenView said, well, okay, well, I can collect this SNMP data, and I can ping the box, so if this value is okay and this value is okay, then I'll assume the server's okay. And it's like driving a car and trying to calculate gas mileage by saying, well, the fuel pump's rotating at this speed, and the exhaust manifold's at this temperature, so I must be getting this MPG. What we decided was, well, let's like act like a user. If we're going to access a web page, let's access a web page, see how long it takes. If we want to do a DNS lookup, let's do a DNS lookup. And so OpenMS was started and mainly built around this service level measurement. So we have all these little plugins that will go out and test different services on your network. Now, one of the things that open source runs into is that not only, in order to be adopted, not only do you have to do everything that the commercial guys have been doing for 15 years, you got to do it better and do more stuff. And getting back to SLAs, one of the things OpenNMS does is we have variable polling rates. Now, if you went into OpenView and said, okay, I want to poll something, you know, it's going to poll at a fixed rate every minute, every 5 minutes, every 10 minutes, etc. Now, when I was a consultant, I'd go to these guys and they'd say, you know, what kind of SLAs do you want to manage? What do you want to provide? And he said, I want to guarantee five nines. I go, okay, you know, five nines, is that over a decade, a century? You know, what are we talking about? I don't do it over a month. I want five nines over a month. And I said, well, do you realize that that's like 30 seconds of downtime? You might as well guarantee 100% uptime, because if you detect a problem, you're not going to be able to fix it in 30 seconds. And they'd look at me and go, well, no one would believe 100% uptime. But anyway, so OpenNMS said, well, let's look at the four nines. You know, you're trying to guarantee four nines in a month. That allows you about 4.5 minutes of downtime. Now, if you go to OpenView and you're polling every 5 minutes, the moment you detect that something's down, you don't poll it again for 5 minutes. So the shortest outage you could have would be 5 minutes long, which means you can't even guarantee four nines. But it's ridiculous to poll your network every minute unless you're real anal about trying to guarantee a service level. So what we did at OpenNMS is we have a variable downtime model. We poll every 5 minutes out of the box. You can configure it, of course. But if something goes down, we say, oh, well, we're going to temporarily poll it every 30 seconds so that we can catch if it comes up. Now, if I detect that Apache's down, I can restart Apache in a, 30 seconds, a minute. So maybe I'll have a 30-second or a minute outage, and I can tolerate one or two of those a month and still meet a 4.9 window. And so that's one of the big challenges is trying to do something that the other guys don't do as well as doing everything that they do. Now, the third half of OpenNMS is data collection. And right now, this is we spent a lot of time working on it. I don't know if you're familiar with SNMP, but the Simple Network Management Protocol is a protocol for exchanging information, mainly performance information between a manager and an agent.
And so what he's not telling you is that writing like an SNMP reader application can be actually quite difficult because it's got this really ridiculous sort of state model.
Exactly. I mean, it's UDP, which there's nothing wrong with UDP, but basically you send your stuff out and you kind of got to listen for it to come back. It's non-trivial. The guys, when OpenNMS was started, they wrote their own Java library called Joe SNMP. And
the irony here is that SNMP stands for Simple Network.
Not if you're on the Microsoft.com website. SNMP stands for the Simple Network Mail Protocol.
What? Really?
I don't know.
Monitoring protocol?
I won't sit here.
Well, let's not make fun of Microsoft. It's too easy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it is too easy. But and they probably took it down already. But anyway, so we go out and we collect this SNMP data, which can tell us things like the number of bits that have gone through this circuit in the last 5 minutes, or what the CPU utilization is, or what the temperature is on this device. I mean, I was given a class once. We were installing OpenNMS, and we were monitoring some customer premise equipment. And we got this alert that this foundry box had it was overheating. The temperature was like 42°C, and so the customer called down to the customer to the CPE environment, and it turned out they were putting up some new drywall, and the drywall guys didn't want that fancy stereo equipment to get dirty. So they wrapped it in saran wrap.
Wrapped in saran wrap.
They put plastic all around the intakes on this device. And so, it was just kind of funny to configure this temperature alert and then watch it pop up on the screen. And it, kind of paid for itself right there. But so that kind of information that we gather, we have a client that gathers bandwidth information and then presents it to its end customers. So when the end customer goes to their customer portal, they can see the circuit that they're paying for, what their bandwidth is. And it's a non-trivial problem to collect 500,000 data points every 5 minutes and store them. That's what we're doing at this one site. I mean, it's, what is that? Something like 3.6 million data points an hour or something like that? No, 2.4 million. 2.4 million data points an hour. And so it's just, again, we've got this great community that's kind of stepped up, and Matt Brzezowski is kind of the architect, has done a really good job. I would put our data collector up against anybody else's data collector. I mean, commercial or non-commercial. I mean, it's a pretty powerful piece of code. And then the last thing that we do is notification and event management. So, like, if you were to spend a lot of money on Micromuse, one of the things they do is they call it deduplicating events. So suppose you get an SNMP trap that says you've got a high bandwidth on a circuit. Now, the problem with some SNMP agents is they're pretty stupid, and so they'll just keep sending the trap. hey, high threshold, high threshold, high threshold, high threshold. My Linksys router that we use in the office, it supports SNMP, but if you do a successful SNMP get, if you have permissions to get data, it automatically sends events to you, SNMP traps, and it sends a trap on every internet connection. So on a busy day, I mean, we've got a small office, but on a busy day, you'll have 50 to 100,000 separate connections to the internet. And what most tools would do is list all 100,000 of them in a browser, and you couldn't see the forest for the trees. Well, we've implemented this thing called alarms, where you set up a reduction key, and you say, if this event comes in and these things match, instead of creating a new event, why don't you reduce it and put it online? that functionality from a commercial vendor would cost you $100,000. And for us, just go to SourceForge and download it. We're also getting into security a little bit. You know, we're getting back to the whole FCAPS model. The last piece there is security. And we have a vulnerability scanner that ties in with Nessus. So the idea is we have this capability scanner that will go and discover your network. Why don't we take the same ideas behind it and use that to test for vulnerabilities? So you can load up like a vulnerability library and run with that.
So who's using OpenNMS? I mean, you know, don't the big shops say, well, it's got, you know, we got to have Tivoli, we've got to have OpenView, we've got to have a big company behind this. We can't use some little free program we downloaded from the internet.
That's crazy. We'd have to count on it.
Crazy talk.
It is funny. I mean, we had Harvard Medical School was a customer for a year, and then they spent a whole bunch of money on this new lab. You know, tons of money on a new network, new infrastructure, new NOC, and the head guy basically said, we can't use a free software to monitor our network, even though the guys in the trenches, who I tend to deal with the most, loved it. So, no, we have, right now we've got about 40 to 50 customers in 11 countries, and a lot of them are quite large. I wish I could name them, because, you know, a lot of people just won't let you, and I know it's one of those things like HUCore.com. Yeah, we got thousands of huge customers and people you've heard of. We just can't tell you. But what we thought, I mean, when we started this, we thought it was going to be, okay, the guys who couldn't afford OpenView. Well, we found out the guys who can't afford OpenView are these Fortune 500 companies, you know, who are sitting there. But when
Can't afford it financially or can't afford it technically?
Both.
Yeah.
I mean, we did some work with General Electric. We were monitoring General Electric's backbone until they ended up outsourcing the whole thing. But when we were monitoring their backbone, they were paying some obscene amount to InfoVista, which is a reporting tool. And, you know, we came along and said, well, heck, you know, you take our stuff, it automates all this stuff, gives you the same graphs that InfoVista does, and get support for, you know, X amount of dollars a year, and, you know, you're fine. And they love the idea. We've been trying to deal with the people that they outsourced their monitoring to, but we haven't been able to hook up with them very well. But it's companies like that we've seen that come to us. But what's so funny is we do no marketing. Almost all of this is word of mouth, and where I will put OpenNMS up against anything is with our community. And people don't realize that open source is not about open source software. It's about getting people to use it by building a community.
And letting them build it out, you know?
Well, my business model has very few developers and a lot of consultants and trainers and things like that, because a lot of our ideas and the architecture is all OpenNMS, you know, the core OpenNMS team, but almost all of the add-ons and things like that come from our community. We did, back in 2004, I was sitting around and I'm like, you know, we've got these guys, you know, about 10 of them, and they're on the IRC channel, they're on the mailing list, they're doing a lot of work, you know. I need some way just to recognize these guys. Because there's OpenNMS.com, which is the company I work for, and then there's, you know, OpenNMS.org, which is the project. And so I decided to form the Order of the Green Polo.
So you're in a cult.
Well, no, we call it the OGP. You know, are you down with the OGP? We're all white and nerdy,
We were talking about Weird Al before we started.
Yeah, Weird Al's been going through my head until we started talking. But basically, I said, okay, let's take the Master's Green Jacket and something like the Order of the Garter and combine them. And so I created this group, and I said, look, you know, I just want to recognize these guys. They got a fancy certificate that I bought. You know, went down to Staples and printed up a fancy certificate, sent them the Hunter Green Polo. You could buy the white polos. You could buy the black polos. Which had to earn the Hunter Green Polo. And, you know, they all got openms.org email addresses, you know, and it was just amazing. That's probably the best idea I've ever had, because the community really started to coalesce after that. Then we decided, okay, we need to have a developers conference. And as I mentioned, I live out on a horse farm, and I got a big old farmhouse. And so I said, okay, guys, you get to Pittsboro, North Carolina, which is where we are. I said, you get out to Pittsboro, North Carolina, and I'll put you up, I'll feed you, and we'll just spend a week working on OpenNMS. And I had five guys, four from the U.S. and one from England, show up And we just coded for an entire week.
He thought he was going to get a green polo horse. He didn't understand it.
Yeah,
just
right.
Just a shirt.
Right.
I can't ride this thing.
Oh, what man. Is this? It's a shirt. I came all the way here for a bloody shirt.
Actually, he's been doing is the guy's name's Craig Gallen, and he's actually getting OpenMS into the Telemanagement Forum, which is the big telco organization. Our next goal is to take over carrier space, and so he's working on getting moving OpenMS into this model called OSSJ, the next generation operational system support. I want to throw some acronyms out here.
That doesn't make any sense.
Okay,
pull that out of a hat. What I
the little TLAs and FLAs. If I go to England, and if I'm German, assume, and I go to England, and I turn on my phone, chances are it's going to work. I can make phone calls. And even though I'm on British Telecom and my phone might be Deutsche Telekom, the way this works is that there are well-defined interfaces between telcos where they can exchange data. So when you turn your cell phone on in London, it'll go through and say, oh, I want to query this database over here and see whether or not this phone's allowed to make calls, handle billing, all that other stuff. And there is a Java specification for those interfaces called OSSJ. And being a Java product, we've done some demonstrating of this tools with a television broadcast company in England called Arkiva. They just won this big contract from the BBC.
Not to be confused with Atipa.
No, not to be Atipa. They actually sold the name, which I thought was kind of weird. It's like after
Atipa sold the name to another Atipa.
Yes.
Oh, isn't that odd. So the reason why this is interesting to me is I actually knew Jason Talley way back when, and before Jason and Mark Torres got together, and Mark Torres was the guy at Atipa, and this is all like old school like Linux stuff. And I remember when Atipa was buying and putting together teams like the OpenNFs, what became OpenNFs and NMS team, and some of the other companies they were buying. And we're like, what are they doing in Kansas? You know,
exactly, Kansas City. It's and it's kind of I'm really confused sometimes. I have a little as I'm the mouth of OpenNMS, kind of modeled after the mouth of Sauron. You know,
It's an eye. Sauron doesn't have a mouth.
Yeah. Well, no, but the mouth.
But if he did, it would sound like Taurus.
It would sound like this. Right.
Well, you've seen the extended version, of course, of Return of the King, and that little guy with the bad teeth who comes out on a pony.
Oh,
that's the mouth of Sauron.
That's the mouth of Sauron. You're right.
So I'm the mouth of Sauron with slightly better teeth.
Okay.
So, mouth of open enemy.
Why do you sort of, you know, you'd think the font of all evil could afford braces. I'm just saying.
It doesn't want good teeth.
Yeah, at least he could spring for some gold fronts, you know. I just, it's very kind of frustrating because we're all techie. We're old school. We don't have any of this marketing savvy to, like, announce something before we do it. And like this open, this OSSJ thing, we went and we took JBoss and we made a container. We sent alarms from OpenMS to JBoss. And then this other commercial package called Statewise went into JBoss and got the alarms and did some stuff with them. And, you know, we did this through all these standard interfaces and we turned this on and then we sent a press release about it. You know, it's not like, hey, we're going to open source stuff now. And I had a little rant the other day just because I'm you know, we've been doing this for 5 years now, and I think there's a lot of value in true open source tools. And today, there's all these different models now. There's people who take an open source tool, and then they try to commercialize it with some commercial, you know, GUIs on top of it. And then you have others who are call it the shareware model, which is, well, this bit's free and open source, but this other bit has all the cool stuff in it. Well, you got to pay for that. And I'm not trying to disrespect these models. I wish we could come up with a better word than open source, because it kind of frustrates me in the fact that, you know, it would be a lot easier if I had a packaged product and once I put all the work into it, I could just sell it 10 times for, you know, the amount of work I put in it. Instead, we're a services company. You know, I go through and we have to earn our money, and there's other companies out there. We're open source, and then you actually go to download their source code and you get
and not so much. Yeah.
And so, you know, being these little guys, we just kind of, you know, we have a really bizarre business model. It's called spend less than you earn. I know it probably won't catch on.
No, but, that'll never fly. No.
Yeah, but the idea is,
you should
know,
see what Leo spends money on.
Hey,
it's absurd.
You
want to
know what I spend money on? I send him $2 a month.
Do you?
As of today, yeah.
You're a good man, Taurus.
For what?
Funny.
You know, wait, for what?
For what? I got my Floss subscription.
It's a Twitch subscription. Maybe you haven't heard, but we ask for donations, Chris, and that's how
I'm
we.
I'm kind
pay.
Of a disconnected talent.
That's how
guy.
We paid for all that expensive equipment you've purchased.
Oh,
and notice it.
Now you like it.
Is that how it worked?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
Leo
nice
and I didn't set this up before.
Leo, you're not
to
give me any
way.
Money, man. It's okay.
I already gave you money, dude.
Yeah, but just for
that mic
the
you're
the
using, the interface.
Great mic.
I think I still owe you money though for the recorder, don't I?
Yeah, that's okay. Though.
I'll send you $2.
$2.
This month, I'll send you $2 yeah. next
month. And every month thereafter.
Now I'm feeling all guilty that I didn't know the goings-on.
No, we ask for donations. We also have advertisements. We're talking to Taurus. Do you ever use your last name, or should I? Well, I guess...
Yeah.
It's Sauron, right?
Yes. It's Taurus Sauron.
I'm like Prince and Madonna. No, I use my last name.
He's a Balrog.
I actually... that a lot. Taurus Balog. It's Hungarian.
There's so Taurus is your real name. It's not some fancy Dan Unix-y handle.
Yeah, no, it's not like a Nick. So
no, my parents' first date. They saw this movie called Taurus Bulba.
Oh, you're named after Taurus Bulba.
Yeah, it is. He kills his son.
He's a terrible person.
So
I love the name.
Well, my dad said, you know, I'm Southern. I'm from North Carolina. My dad said, you know, you do anything good, people remember you. You do anything bad, I'll be the first to hear about it.
And the tagline is this: a love story of flesh and fire.
Yeah.
Well, that's very much like the Open NMS project, I believe. Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's what. If anyone wants to get into open source, grow some thick skin. I mean,
oh,
I got to totally agree with us right now.
We've talked about that before, and actually, I'd like to ask you about that. How has that been in terms of your relationships with both your users and the other developers and so forth? Why do you have to have thick skin?
Well, I mean, the developers, the ones who've been around with the project, you kind of bond anyway, so there's not usually a problem with that. But you go out and you put something for free. I like to make the analogy. Have you ever seen the newspapers you can buy, you know, put your quarter in, pull down the thing, you get your newspaper out.
Right.
And there's always a person who gets two or three.
Yeah, honor system, we
you
call
know.
It. Yeah.
If it's free, you know, I'll take two. And so when I first started this, you know, I went home, and I'm in my attic. I'm living out on a farm, no broadband internet. I had a satellite internet connection, sitting in my little attic room there, typing on the computer. And you know, I get these emails, and they'd come in. It's like, OpenNMS is great, but what you need to do is, and there'd be like this laundry list of all the stuff that I needed to do. You know, and I'm perfectly aware of all the stuff we need to do. You know, show me the code,
right?
to do the whole Jerry Maguire thing. So I used to take time out of my day and go, well, we're working on that. Here's our direction. You know, we're real small. We're just building the community. And finally, I just said, heck with this. And I had a kind of a form letter, and it basically said, look, OpenNMS is enterprise grade. You know, if it's too hard for you, go and try something like Nagios. And I'd get flamed back, and the discussion was over. You know.
Do you have a plug-in kind of architecture so people could easily write plugins and that kind of thing?
Yeah, we're written in Java, and if you write a plugin right now, you have to recompile.
So it's not like OpenView where you can just accommodate components.
Right. Now we have what's called our general-purpose plugin, which will run a script. So, you know, I went to one, we've done a lot of Nagios to OpenNMS migrations recently. And if you happen to have this check script that you're running, you know, we support NRPE, we support NS client, we can run a script from the command line, and all that is configuration. You go into a file, you make a change, you're done. But for actually creating a new plugin, you have to write some code, it has to be Java, and you have to recompile. Now, what we're moving toward with OpenNMS 2.0 is to have an environment where you just create the jar with your plugin. So it's totally separate from OpenNMS, and you just drop it in a directory and we can use it. But at the moment, no, it's probably one of the weaker points of OpenNMS. Now, the plus side is a lot of our default plugins are very configurable. So we have an SNMP plugin that can go and test SNMP data, for example. But the
I
idea
imagine
is,
that 90% of what people do, you support. I mean, it's the outliers that people might need to write something for.
Exactly, and
that's the beauty of an open source project is the stuff that needs to be done gets done first.
Well, what's beautiful is when I worked for commercial software companies, we'd sit around this big table and try to guess what customers wanted.
Right, you don't have
and
to.
And now I have a whole list. People tell me what they want. And I said, go to Bugzilla, open an enhancement bug. If people vote for it, we'll stick it in the code. You know, and so we've been very, very grateful to have that. But the whole architecture was designed for, you know, the service monitors. You can plug in new service monitors. And the data collector, you can plug in new data collection. And we make our money. I mean, part of our offering is custom development. And so you can come to us, and the beauty of it is you don't have to shoehorn your business processes into, you know, a tool like OpenView. You come to us and say, this is how we work. And we say, oh, well, if we built this little module in, we could just plug it in. We have a company out in Switzerland, and they didn't like our discovery. They had a whole database of everything they wanted to monitor. So we wrote an importer. So they export their database to XML. We have an importer that reads it in, handles all add moves and changes, and, you know, they paid for that piece, and now they got a product that does exactly what they want it to do. I can't imagine going back now. I mean, I used to do the BMC patrols and the OpenViews and stuff, and I can't imagine going back and sitting there not being able to just crack open that little piece of code and make a change that may make all the difference in the world. But the advantages, I mean, if you ever have purchased a big enterprise commercial software product, what they'll do is they'll sell you the product, and then they'll sell you support on top of it. One of the first customers I got, they'd gone to Micromuse, and they said, you know, how much to solve that? We're getting churn. They were a little ISP, and they were getting a lot of churn. And they said, we need to get better management, and then we'll have better uptime. We won't get any churn. And Micromuse said, okay, $300,000. We'll come in. $300,000 will fix you up. And they were like, nice, well, they were like, okay, we're losing, you know, 50, 60 grand a year, $300,000, it'll pay for itself in 5 years, okay. And they said, but wait, you'll need support.
Uh-oh.
And they were like, well, what's support? And it's like, support is 20% a year. And they were like, well, what do I need support for? Well, bug fixes. And so they said, so you're going to sell me some software.
That's it. We pay you.
That you say, yeah.
You have no idea how typical this is, though. I mean, it's not just bug fixes. Man. It's phone support. It's configuration support.
Yeah, but it's
there are like, ways you know, can justify it. But, I mean, sometimes it ends up feeling like you're just being ripped off.
Yeah. Well, these guys looked at it and said, you know, if it's going to cost us 20% of $300,000, well, that's equal to or more than we're losing in churn. Might as well put the $300,000 in my pocket. And that's how, when I left Oculand, my thought was, look, I've been doing consulting for 10 years where all these people spent lots of money on software licenses yet had to pay me to come in and get it working. Why don't they just pay me to come in and get it working and put the rest of the money in their pocket? Mm. Or better yet, me. It doesn't always happen that way, but we have actually had customers come to us and say, we're not charging enough.
Well, now I understand your plot with your wife on making money on free software.
Making money. Well,
it wasn't so crazy after all.
What drives me crazy is I'll go to Linux World and we'll get, and so I'll hear someone, well, open source isn't going to take off until there's an open source billionaire.
Yeah, people say that. You know, I have a word for those people. You know what it is? Moron.
Well, I point out, I say Jeff Bezos. And they go, the Amazon.com guy? I said, yeah. Well, he doesn't sell software. I'm like, exactly. If he didn't have access to open source software, and by that I mean like Linux or even the tools like PHP and Python, if he didn't have access to that open source software, he would not be able to have those razor-thin margins that Amazon has, and he'd be out of business. Good point. In my mind, Jeff Bezos is an open source billionaire.
Good point.
But getting over that idea that you don't sell software is huge. But, you know, we're doing it. I mean, we price our services. We put them on the webpage. If you go to openms.com, there's the shill there. If you go to openms.com, we have our prices on the webpage so that,
look, you know, the calls have begun already.
Oh my God.
Man, that's the best $2 a month I ever spent.
Fast.
We should do this live, you know, Leo. Yeah.
If those phones start ringing now,
we
will continue this podcast.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, you ought to do well. It seems like you've already done it. You just tape a whole bunch of shows and then take a couple months off. But
yeah, right.
You kind of did it out of order there.
That's how Chris DeBona does it.
Are you coming down on me here? You know, because Leo's in Canada for a week, and then I travel, and sometimes they just bang into each other.
You know what's great? It was a test to see how many people listen to this podcast,
and it turns out there were three.
I got those three emails, and man, I feel bad. So those people are going to know. There's a lot of people who said, "What happened? I want more Floss." So here you go, more Floss.
It's a really cool idea. I mean, and it is. I mean, it's about community, and that's the hardest thing. If I went, suppose I had the source code to Lotus 1-2-3, and I just released the source code to Lotus 1-2-3, do you think Excel would have anything to worry about? You know, unless you build or buy a community. I mean, Mark Shuttleworth has done a great job with buying a community. And that's not a knock on Ubuntu. It's, you know, hey, it's what it takes. But, you know, because people ask me, you know, what are you worried about as far as, you know, business competition? Because I see, you know, I got in this big blog war about Hyperic because they kind of open source some of their code.
Kind of.
And, well, I mean, the day they announced that they were open sourcing their code, I went to download it because they're Java, we're Java. Hey, if it's GPL, if there's anything good, we'll go use it. And so I go to download it, and the license was still the old thou shalt not reverse engineer or do an assets. That's a novel open source license.
Or and, not.
And so, the CTO of Hyperic writes back on my blog. That's blogs.opennms.org. And so he writes back on my blog, and he's like, well, you know, I wrote Mod Perl, and, you know, I've done all this open source stuff, and open source is hard. Yeah.
So we're going to call it open source, but not really make it open source because exactly. It's hard?
It's hard. It's hard to, you know, we're bootstrapped. I mean, we are a profitable company.
It's hard work.
And it's a lot of hard work. It's like
it's hard work.
A list of 10 people I want to hire. But right now, they're all going to come from the OGP. I mean, they're basically, we hired this guy named DJ Greger back in August. He was a 2-year OGP member. And
what's OGP?
Order the Green Polo.
Oh, right. Order, sorry.
Are you down
follow along with the podcast?
Sorry, I lost that part.
I
didn't know
acronyms.
Either.
Sorry.
I didn't know. I'm sorry. We're trying to keep up with you, but you're just too, Taurus, your brain is...
I do get a little excited, excuse me. But
well, you have the OGP, you know.
Yes, I have my
you're boys, the OG.
My posse.
From the west
right?
side.
And so we you know, I hire this guy, and the day he's on the payroll, he's making money for the company. Because he didn't have to, I didn't have to say, okay, you need to go work on this project now. He already wanted to work on the project. B, he already knew how the thing worked because he taught himself. I keep thinking today, if I was in college, I mean, when I was in college, all I did was drink beer and chase women. And that's why I've been kicked out of some of the best colleges in the country. But back then, we didn't really have the internet. You know, we had BBSs, and I had my World War IV, so in 2 days, I could get an email back from my friends in California. But, you know, so I didn't have the internet. But I'm like, if I'm in college right now, I'm going to get to work on an open source project or start my own, because then you got the time, you got the resources. And when it comes time to find employment, you go and say, hey, look, yeah, I did this, which is much better than, you know, I took a class.
Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right. I didn't even really think about that, but that's what better experience could you get?
Yeah, I'm like, well, I went to this school in North Carolina. It's high school called the School of Science and Math. And
what'd they teach there?
A lot of different things. We called it the School of S&M, but...
Oh, interesting.
Oh, that's what they taught there. Okay.
But it was a public high school, but it was residential, and it was one of the governor had said, okay, I want to start this school for people interested in math and science. So you took the SATs, applied like you were going to college, and one of the guys who came a few years after me, he started his own company out of his dorm room. And it's called Motricity now. He did a search engine.
Oh, you were basically trying to throw this whole Dell thing at us, weren't you?
So, well, what Dell thing?
Well, because the old starting in your dorm room, everyone thinks Dell, and then...
Yeah. Well, it can be. I mean... As an employee, you know, I have to be a pointy-haired boss sometimes. And when I'm looking at people, it's like, oh, you took a course and had a job? You know, it doesn't do much for me. It's like, you know, if someone – you got to have some spirit and initiative in to work in an open-source environment. You got to really love what you do, and you can't teach that. You can't hire that. And that's why I'm old. I hit 40 in January, and it's like, yeah.
Wait, from what direction?
Exactly. No, I mean, we pulled we had a deliverable last week, and I pulled my first all-nighter in years, and I used to pull all-nighters all the time, and it's like, this thing hit me for like 3 days, yeah, you know? Yeah. So like, I went home, I was like, man, why am I always tired?
You don't have the resiliency you used to have.
But, you know, at least in this job, I know my boss is an asshole, so it's quite all right, you know? But people wonder it and think
that's
it. You know? Well, it's, you know, I'm going to have to cut that out, but...
That's all right. We'll just say, I know my boss is a butthead, and I think we could leave that
in. Yeah, but, yeah, I won't drop any F-bombs or anything here.
So. That's all right.
But, no, I've been just really... I've never had a better job, and I've never worked harder in my life. I mean, but you get to meet great people. I mean, I met Chris briefly in Linux World Boston, although I'm pissed at Linux.
Yeah, but what about the great people?
So the what people? Oh, the great people. Oh, yeah, but I'm punching. Yeah, we could call this one of these brush with mediocrities kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a brush with greatness.
I'll put a little echo on it. Brush with mediocrity.
We should change the name of the podcast to that.
No.
Mediocrity Monthly.
No. These are all great people.
No, I think so. Obviously, I wouldn't do it.
Right. Yeah, so, Chris, would you consider yourself a celebrity nerd? I heard that word.
So I get this sometimes. Leo gets it way more than I do. But it's like people are like, oh, you're like famous, and I'm like, for what value of fame exactly?
You know,
I think Rita Moreno is more famous than I am.
I would guarantee you that. Yeah,
and nobody knows who she is. Right. So let's just.
We should have a little Google fight here on Chris DeBona versus Rita Moreno.
Well, this is what Google Trends is for. You know, it'll chart it. You know?
I think you're trending up. I think that's for sure.
Well, yeah, and she may be trending down, but it's like, you know. Well, I don't know why I picked Rita Moreno. It's kind of a bad.
It's an excellent pick. I think it's.
She's great.
She's a wonderful, wonderful woman, and I know her personally.
You do?
She's my aunt. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know her,
dude.
You've broken my heart.
Yeah, well, the first time I looked up Chris on Google, it was all the court transcripts for the DVD case. So
I practically got thrown in jail. This is what people don't know. I'm sitting there on the stand, you know, and the judge is like brilliantly against the idea of code as free speech, right? And so whenever they started going down the First Amendment route, he's like, "You guys sound like you're about to do this code as free speech thing. If you do that, I'm gonna be really upset."
You're kidding.
The judge is saying this. No, I'm totally serious. Oh. And so, you know, the lawyers danced around, and I'm just answering questions. I'm just up there and trying not to piss off the judge, trying not to piss off, you know, my ideals. And you know, finally the judge looks over at me. He's like, "Are you saying, it sounds like what you're saying to me is that you're equating source code to free speech?" And I didn't want to say yes, right? But I didn't want to say no.
Right.
So I said, "Well, you do the math, judge."
Oh, that's good. Oh, good response.
Yeah. Just for the listeners out there, saying "you do the math, judge" turns out to piss them off.
Oh, no.
Or contempt, I think, is the term.
Oh, yeah. And I didn't end up going to jail, but the look on his face, I was like,
mad.
Oh, man, I am dead. He was pissed.
You do.
And basically, he was like, "Okay, I think you're done." I'm like, "Okay, thanks, judge."
Oh, wow.
Oh, my goodness. Math, judge. I like it.
Yeah.
Well, I like your moxie, kid.
Oh, yeah. It always comes out at the wrong time.
You do math, judge.
You do the math.
That's boy.
Yeah, I remember asking sometime about the time I told a police officer, "Well, thanks for nothing."
Oh.
Yeah, that's another good one right there.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
I got pulled over the other day, and the cop said, "Well, what is it? Are you lazy or just stupid?" And, boy, you know, my temptation is to say, you know, "Is there a third choice or something?" I just said, "I'm stupid." Because, you know, it's always best to admire and honor authority, I find, especially when they have guns.
Yeah. Well, when I was a teenager, you know, I had the long hair, the earrings, the whole bit. I thank God I'm not a teenager these days because I'd have tattoos and the whole bit.
You know, I thought about that recently, too. It's like I would have gotten arrested and, like, been like one of these kids on the news. Not for bringing guns or anything, but it's just like everything I did, like, back then got me detention. Now would get me thrown in jail.
Because they have metal detectors.
Some Ritalin pump on my back.
Exactly. We all need Ritalin pumps. I think that's the case.
When I get stopped when I was that age, and I'd always get the ticket, and now it's just like, "Yes, sir." You
know? Yep, I'm very polite.
I'm like, tell the truth, and it's actually kind of a good thing, you know. Just be upfront and try and tell the truth, and it's kind of hard in the world of even open source software. You go to Linux World these days, and there's a mechanical bull down in the. Downstairs. I'm actually a little torqued at Linux World at the moment.
Why is that?
Well,
but before you go on, what does the mechanical bull have to do with
police
officers?
Well, it was kind of bringing, I'm trying to bring the whole thing back
to open
source.
Okay, bring it together, would you?
But it was the idea of, this idea of open source as more of a grassroots kind of thing. We got invited to the .org pavilion at Linux World Expo in 2005. And so we went to Boston. That's where Google hosted a party, and I got to meet Chris.
Oh, yeah, that was a fun party.
It was a real fun party. So I really had a good time there. And then August turned around. We went to San Francisco, and we actually won, you know, a best of show, you know, not a best of show, but best systems management tool excellence award.
Excellent.
You know, we beat out Tivoli, and we beat out Novell, and then we're like, you know, but I really wanted to be in the .org pavilion. You know, because that's where, you know, that's in my mind where, you know, we call it the .org ghetto, because if you ever go to these shows, the Mechanical Bull and the, you know, Sun's running, you know, Quake on these big servers, and, you know, you can go play in Unreal Tournament or whatnot, and, you know, we're all upstairs, kind of in the corner, and no fancy booth, no Mechanical Bull.
I love the .org pavilion. You know, I'm the person who started that when I was on the conference board at IDG like 7 years ago.
Well, God bless you.
It was so cool, you know?
It was, and so, you know, the next time comes around, hey, they're calling again. The next year comes around. Hey, I'll take some orders. And we thought because we got recognized with this award that they would come and ask us to go again, and they never did. And we contacted them, and they're basically, oh yeah, we're full now. And so I don't know if it's because, you know, we do have a commercial arm, and I could probably come up with the money for the booth, but I want to be in the .org pavilion. I don't want to be off, you know, next to the Mechanical Bull, because to me it is all about the project, and it's all about, you know, I want to be with the guys with the NetBSD toaster. I don't want to be downstairs. So, but Linux World UK, they invite us back every year. We're in the .org village there. And so we'll be, again, if you're in October 26th, if you're in London, please stop by the Olympia Exposition Center.
So here's a question for you. How often do you find yourself like having network equipment people like bugging you? But in a good way, but, you know, bugging you.
We have talked to a few of them. Now, OpenNMS is GPL. And there are a few parts of it that are LGPL, but for the most part, the application is GPL. But we've gone out of our way to make interfaces that should allow a proprietary component to plug into our data. And probably about once every other month, we start conversations with hardware vendors. We did some work with Tut Systems. The gang over at Pogo Linux actually did this thing called Pogo Vista and basically skinned OpenNMS and wrote some configuration tools for their equipment. I don't know if they still use it, but and we really want to, that's a market I'd like to cater to, because if you've got a product like CiscoWorks, my dream is, you know, land CiscoWorks, and you've got CiscoWorks requires to be real useful something like an OpenView. And it's like, why does Cisco want to give business to HP? And especially on top of OpenView, because not only are you debugging, you know, your code, you've got to debug their code as well. And we are aiming to be, that's one of the reasons we're doing this OSSJ, kind of open OSS focus as well, because we really want to integrate with other tools, be it proprietary or not. I mean, I love open source software. I'm a convert. I didn't, you know, start this way, but whatever works. I mean, if you like Windows and it works for you, more power to you. But you know, we offer what I think is a solution that's a little bit different, and it would be nice. Right now, I guess we're talking with about three different people about building an element manager for them on top of OpenNMS. Mm-hmm. I don't know how far that's going to go, but if anyone's out there listening and wants to run their stuff on top of our stuff, well, let's get together, because it would be a lot of fun.
I know a couple people at Cisco I can introduce you to. I mean, I'd imagine you must too, though.
Yeah, we had some conversations a few years ago, but it's really hard. I mean, I can remember Motorola was interested in OpenNMS, and again, this is one of these problems. I sell time. You know, most people have smart people. They can download OpenNMS. They can read the how-tos. They can read the install guide. They can get it up and running, and it may take them a month or two to get a lot of value out of it. Whereas for me, you know, I can come and teach a course. I can come and do, we have this thing called a Greenlight project. We spend a week with you. We get it set up and running and great. And so Motorola contacted me and said, we're interested in OpenNMS and want to know if it's going to work in our environment. And I'm like, great. Here's the SourceForge page. Go download it. Lots of luck. And they're like, well, no, we want you to come and set it up so that we can evaluate it.
Right.
And I'm like, great, we had this product called the Getting to Know You project, and you know, it's a 2-day project. We fly out there, we'll set it up, you know. Oh, we don't want to pay for it. You know, we'll pay for it after we decide. And I'm like, but
or
know,
not.
I sell time. I was like, you know, I sell time. If I come and set this stuff up for you and get it working, you don't need to pay me anything. that's kind of the work product is the is this effort, and so I didn't get the Motorola account, but we do a lot of, there's a, I don't know, you're probably familiar with this book by Jeffrey Moore called Crossing the Chasm.
Oh, sure.
And it's, you know, anyone who's starting a business based around technology really needs to read this book, and not necessarily for, I mean, his chasm idea is very, very important, but what I liked were some tidbits. Like he said, make things easier to buy, not easier to sell. And right. So that's why we pack it. And if you're a services organization, it's kind of hard to actually, you know, someone calls up and says, hey, I want some services. And you're like, okay, well, what do you want? And you spend a lot of time. It's like you set out these products that, because 80 to 90% of what people want is the same. We've got like this green light project, and we'll go and spend a week with you and get your stuff set up. And, you know, 80% of what we do on one of these projects is the same for all customers, and the other 20% is custom to them. Right. But it still gets done in a week. It's done in the time. And people, maybe it was the bubble, but any business based around open source really needs to act like a business. I mean, I knew the guys at, you know, at what was it, Razorfish? You know, during the bubble, they got like tons of money, and they had, you know, pictures of, you know, so the guy would redo his office, corner office in Manhattan with, you know, pictures of vaginas on the wall or something like that, and he was just oh so cool. And quoting from the Wired article here, but you know, and so the idea is, oh, you're young and smart, well, you go get a bunch of money and you're rich, and it's like, you know, what gets me every day is this idea of being a business. We try to look after our customers. And we've adopted the mission, our motto is help customers have fun, make money. And pretty much in that order. Yeah. It's a lot easier to keep a customer than to get one. And so we try to take, sometimes we're not always as good as I'd like to be, but we try to take good care of our customers and watch the finances and you know, keep your eye on the ball. And I guess any company can do that. But it seems with open source, it's this idea, well, I'm going to create this thing and someone will buy me or someone will, you know, I'll just make lots of money. And I think those days are over. Get into biotech.
Biotech. Talk about a hard business, though. A friend of mine's running one of those. And
but it's
kind
if
of appalling
really,
the costs, you know.
You know, you come up a cure for erectile dysfunction, you can not only send a lot of spam, you can make a lot of money.
What if you could do that and solve the problem with managing networks? I'm just saying. All right.
Oh, yeah. You had a question, I believe. Sorry.
I don't even remember it now.
Okay.
Well, okay. I mean, that sounds like, you know, we've had a pretty good talk. So yeah, I think we should wrap it up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as long as we're now off the record, man, I've been to the Googleplex.
Oh, good.
Really good food. And I told you about, I still get the tidal pool is probably, the wave pool is probably my favorite thing at Google.
Oh, the endless pools.
Yeah, because there's two little pools and a lifeguard.
Yep. That's and a great job that lifeguard has.
Seriously, the time
we
I
were,
saw
we her, were told we had to have a lifeguard. The city said that we had to have it. So
yeah, I'm just like, you know, put a little, sorry, pool closed, go get you some food. But no, it was a really neat experience. And I like the kind of energy that was there. But, you know, you need something to monitor all those appliances you guys sell. So, you know.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Put open in a mess out there to do it. I mean, I've been pretty proud. I mean, it's funny when you have part of the problem with starting a new product is getting a customer that you can try it on. I mean, you can run it in the lab all you want. And we happen to have 3 customers right now, all with about 50,000 devices.
That's pretty amazing. That's a lot of stuff.
And it's just the fact that it works well, that they come back to us. Now, it requires some serious hardware, don't get me wrong, but you know, we're pretty happy about that whole situation, and we're trying to make it better. And again, the having the guys in the community is great. When I was doing this for 18 months pretty much by myself, you know, I lived on the IRC channel.
Yeah.
That was my social group, and my wife would come home and I'd just grab her, hey honey, what'd you do today? Did you have fun? Did you talk to people? And now, I mean, we had our developers conference this year. Our developers conference this year had 20 people. So last year we had 5 sleeping on my floor. And this year we held it up at the University of Minnesota up in Minneapolis. And, you know, it was one of these guys gave up a week of their lives to come and work on OpenNMS. And we got a lot of good stuff out of it. So it's a hardest job I've ever had, and it's probably the best. But
okay. I think he should rename himself Taurus Balrog, but just because it's so cool. But
I know it would be cool because you'd have like a lion name with the Lord of the Rings name.
OpenNMS.org. Is that the site? I didn't even check.
It is indeed OpenNMS.org.
So if you want to know more, or you have a harried sysadmin who could use some help.
Well, you know what's funny is if you've got a NAT box sitting in front of your cable modem, then you've got a whole whack of computers that you want to keep an eye on. Good point. Fun to install and try out. Good point. I hate to say it. If you install this thing, you can build a career.
You know, that's right.
These kinds of tools.
Being the kind of guy who knows how to install it and use it and run it. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and it's the kind of knowledge that actually translates well into other sort of high-end systems knowledge, you know? So you'll go into, like, an interview for some company. They'll say, well, what do you know about, you know, routers? And you'll say, well, you know, I was looking at the SNMP state diagram on OpenNMS, and da-da-da-da. And they'll be like, whoa, you're hired!
And one other thing to like about the OpenNMS webpage, it's, as far as I know, the only open source webpage that is sponsored by Papa John's Pizza.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, isn't that great?
That's so cool.
They have a couple of, Papa John's sponsored Dev Jam 2006, but they have a Papa John's, little Papa John's link on there, which is so
cool. That's hilarious.
I think, frankly, I always thought these podcasts would be sponsored by Jolt Cola and Domino's Pizza. I don't understand.
Yeah, did they ever contact you about stuff like that?
We've talked to a couple of energy drink makers, but I'm a little nervous about having an energy drink on the show, to be honest.
Yeah, because they're all about, you know, crazy stuff and partying and leather and sex, and we're just, you know.
We're just normal guys.
We're just normal guys.
I do have a leather jacket.
You know, maybe for this week in biotech, you know.
Yeah, believe me, those biologists. You think open source people party?
Holy crow.
Oh, man.
They actually make their own thing.
They do. You know? That's right.
They ferment them. They have E. coli make it. And yeah.
Well, I don't know if they use E. coli. I certainly hope.
Well, actually, E. coli is one of their sort of
secret tools.
One of their tools they use for generating tons of
methane
stuff quickly. No. I'm dead serious.
They use E. coli to make alcohol?
Well, maybe not alcohol, because that would destroy the E. coli. But, I mean, you know, like drugs.
Really?
Train E. coli to make your drugs for you.
Wow, that's fascinating. I'll have
that
to ask Mark.
Well, there's a lot of E. coli. There's the E. coli that you find in your spinach.
Right. That's right. That's you wouldn't want to eat that.
No.
You know, this is why we don't do the biotech podcast. let's stick to the open source. Hey, thanks, Chris. I'll see you next week.
Thank you, Leo.
On Floss Weekly.